RVFTA's Campground of the Week is sponsored by Jayco. To view their complete line of RVs, visit jayco.com.
America the Beautiful. There is adventure to be found around every corner.
And there is no better way to explore it than by staying at one of our country's 14,000 campgrounds.
Our team of correspondents will guide you to the best places to park your rig or pitch your tent.
On each week's episode, we'll give a complete review of one campground, location, activities, amenities, best sites, and tons of other insider intel.
Plus, we'll talk about regional highlights, food, culture, attractions, family fun, and all things great outdoors.
From the East Coast to the West Coast, and from the Great Lakes to the Mississippi Delta, it's time to hit the open road with RVFTA's Campground of the Week. Brett Nielsen, our Western correspondent, is an infrastructure engineering manager for a software company. To break away from the high-tech world, he enjoys camping with his wife Ashley and daughter Lily. The three of them are based in Utah and frequently find themselves enjoying extended weekends in state and federal campgrounds. He blogs about his travels at brettnielsen.com. He likes to say that time camping isn't spent, it's invested.
Hi, Brett.
Hi, guys. How are you?
Great. Now, last time you were on episode one, you took us to Jordanelle State Park in Utah. Where are you taking us to this week?
We are going to take you 2 hours to the west to Antelope Island State Park.
Okay. Antelope Island State Park sounds like it has wildlife and it has water around it. So I like the sound of this already. Position us geographically.
Yeah, so the state park is still based really in northern Utah. It's about an hour north of downtown Salt Lake City and about 2 hours to the west from where Jordanelle State Park was. So still in the northern part of the state and very accessible from main roads and freeways to get into the location.
Now, is the campground actually on the island or... is it nearby an island?
Break down this whole island thing.
Yeah.
Because I think Utah, I don't think island.
Right. It's one of the very few places that us landlocked folks can actually go and be on an island for a little bit. So it's a little bit of a different experience for us. So those that might not be familiar with Utah, we've got a large body of water in the northern part of the state called the Great Salt Lake. And Antelope Island is one of the islands that sits within the bounds of that lake. That lake's been around for a long time. It's a remnant of Lake Bonneville, which dates back to 75,000 BC. So way back in the dinosaur ages, that the lake was here filling the whole valley. And as it's dried up, little bits of it still remain and different bodies of water flow into that lake currently. And
rumor is it's salty.
It's very salty. It's about five times saltier than your typical ocean water. So it's very buoyant, and a lot of people will go out and try to float in it because it's so salty, it makes it very easy to float, a lot easier than normal water.
Is it enjoyable to swim in? Is it refreshing?
No.
Thank you for your honesty.
So that's the insider tip, if you will, right?
Okay, it's
stay out of the water.
don't open your eyes underwater either.
No. Stay away from it. So now, the campground's great, but the water, not so much.
Now, Brett, are there many of these islands or just a few? How do you get to them?
Yeah, so there's a causeway that runs out to Antelope Island. There are a couple other islands out there, but the only one that has camping on it that's got an actual campground is Antelope Island. The island itself is 15 miles long and 5 miles wide, so it's pretty good sized. It's about 28,000 total acres. And then there's a couple of different loops, if you will, on the island for the campground that they have available there.
So it's about twice the size of Rhode Island.
Right.
No, twice the size of Delaware. Delaware. That's a big island, man. I'm surprised.
It's huge. Yeah, the state of Utah purchased it a while back, back in the early 80s. Before that, it was privately owned, and there was a ranch that was active on the island, and the state of Utah purchased it, and then in 93, they turned it over as a state park and made the entire island a state park and gave everybody access to it, which is really nice. So,
one more question before we dive into the campground information. What is the sort of like topography on this island? Is it hilly? Is it flat? Is it grassy? You know, what is the like that sort of geographical feel to it?
There's a lot of flat areas in it. The shoreline is about 4,200 feet above sea level, and it elevates all the way up to about 6,600 feet. So there are some definite peaks in that you can climb on. There's a lot of trails that go around through the different elevation points all over the island. Lots of different hiking. Like I said, it dates back with like Bonneville, and they've dated some of the rocks on the island to 1.7 billion years old, which that's the same date of rocks that have been found in the bottom of the Grand Canyon. So it's been around a long time, and it's kind of a neat place to go and explore.
Do those hiking trails that you mentioned have water? A lot of them have water views.
Yes. Yeah. That's one of the best parts about this campground and the island as a whole is being an island, you've got water on all sides. So as you're hiking, you get to different areas and you can view out and view south into Salt Lake and up north into the communities there. And so you can kind of see all over depending on where you're at on the island. So lots of really pretty views.
Okay. So I can really picture this place in my head now. So let's zoom in to the campground itself. What are you going to tell us about just the size of this, the type of the campground? What should we expect when we pull our rig in here?
Yeah, so this is a one step up from boondocking, if you will, right? So you're not totally dispersed camping. You are in an organized campground, but there are no hookups. And so when you pull into the sites are all nicely done. Most of them are pull through. There's only a couple of back ends there. So they're pull through, very large, spacious sites. Driveways are all asphalt. And then the site itself is primarily concrete. You have a picnic bench type thing and a shade structure over the top of that. So they're very nice, very well manicured sites. There's 25 of them in the primary campground. And again, most of those are pull throughs. And they'll accommodate up to 8 people per site. If you have a larger group, there's another area called White Rock that has 21 sites. It is very primitive. There is nothing there. It's just basically dirt patches that are allocated, and you can have up to 16 people on those.
And you can bring RVs into that area, or is it tent camping? Okay.
No. Over in White Rock, you definitely can. There is a tent-only section. It's called Ladyfinger. And there are 5 tent-only locations that you walk into on those.
But we know you like your concrete slabs.
I know, he does.
You're a concrete slab guy.
I do. I either like it total dirt or concrete. That's what I've found. And I've got reasons I like both of those. So this one works really well. The sites are really well put together. They're clean. They're nice. Like I said, very spacious. There's not a lot of trees. So that is an issue in the middle of summer, is you don't have a lot of shade out here. But we tend to prefer this in the shoulder seasons anyway, so.
Okay, so then we'll just go right ahead to that piece of information. What are the best, while we're talking about it, what are the best times of year to be at this campground if there's not a lot of shade and you might be exposed to the elements?
Yeah, this campground is open year-round, so it is somewhere that if you're transiting through the area, you could spend a couple of nights here any time of year. But we definitely prefer this at the shoulder seasons, the beginning and end of the season, avoiding that summertime. It can get a little bit hot there in the summer, and like I said, there's not a lot of shade at the campground. There are some trees in other areas of the island, but primarily there aren't a lot of trees here on the island itself. So,
Brett, just for our listeners who aren't familiar with Utah weather so much, what would you consider your summer season and like your shoulder seasons? You know, do your shoulder seasons go from May to, you know, April, May, or could you just be more specific about that?
Yeah, April, May are definitely primaries. That's usually when we start breaking the trailer out of storage, is early April. This is usually one of the places that we go to first because it is at a lower elevation than the mountains that are in the area. The snow tends to clear out faster here, and it tends to be a really good place to do that first kind of shakedown of the year. And so we tend to start our season on the island, and a lot of times we end our season on the island. And our, you know, end of the season, I would say you probably September, October is kind of the times that we generally are out here. We've been out in November on the island. The winds do tend to pick up a little bit. It starts to get a little bit cooler, but still very doable in that time frame as well.
I know you mentioned a few loops. How many sites are there, about at this campground?
Yeah, so the primary, what I would really consider the main campground where, if you were coming, where you would actually want to stay, that loop is called Bridger Bay, and there are 25 sites there. Those are all, like I said, the pull-through sites. The other area, White Rock, those are the dirt patches. We've never stayed over there. I'm not fond of it. It doesn't look nice. It's really designed for people with horses to be able to bring their horse trailers down there and have their animals with them. And it's really designed for that versus your typical RV crowd that's out for the weekend.
What about families with small children? Would that work well?
They've got these great pens and you can just open them up, put the kids in, close the doors and you're set. So
now is it hard to book a site here in the shoulder seasons? Cause that's a pretty small campground.
Yeah, it's small by the standards, and it's not. We've never really had a problem. In fact, most of the time when we book here, it's one of those last minute type of places, and so it's kind of our go-to if we're trying to escape for a weekend. We can generally always find something. Now, if we have a big event on the island that weekend, they've got a couple of big events that they do throughout the year, it might be a little bit more difficult to get a site, but we have yet to find any problems getting a site. And we're usually with this campground only booking a week or two in advance. So
yeah, you're sort of a Jedi when it comes to booking state park sites, though. It seems like you have the magic touch.
Yeah, Reserve America is a well-kept secret.
I was just going to ask you. So it is Reserve America.
It is. It is on Reserve America, which is a nice thing to have. There's pros and cons to it, but it's nice. All of our state parks are in there, so it makes it really easy to search and find locations. So.
All right, great. Perhaps the most important question: how much does it cost to camp here?
That's the beauty. The first night, $15.
Whoa!
Each additional night, $12.
Oh, for the win.
Yes.
$12 for the win. So for the cost of two drinks at Starbucks,
yeah,
you can camp. I spend more than that when I take the boys to Starbucks.
Yes.
So
yes.
$15 for the first night, $12 yep. for each additional night.
Yeah.
What is the logic or reasoning between, charging $3 more on the first night?
I don't know. I haven't... I never asked him, but that's interesting.
Well, it's probably processing fees, right? Like, having to reserve it.
She's always
stuff.
Got an answer.
That's right.
Well, you know.
That is a bargain. We have never paid that little to camp anywhere,
never.
Even in a state park.
No.
On the East Coast, our state parks tend to be $30 minimum, $30, $40.
Yeah,
right.
And this is a fun place. There's quite a bit to do on the island, and so for that $15 fee, I feel it's a steal with what you get access to on the island. It's great.
Okay, so before we leave the campground itself and go off into all of those other fun activities, tell me, are there? I'm assuming not because there's no hookups. It seems like a pretty basic campground. Are there other amenities at the campground?
Actually, there are. There is a dump station there on the island. It's not right in the campground, but it's a very short drive still on the island. Of course, you've got your typical, campsite amenities like your fire pits and that kind of stuff. We've got a full visitor center there that's got a gift shop. And the typical kind of activities they would have in the visitor centers. And then they actually have a concession stand that's open in the summertime that gives you access to food and drinks and those kind of things. So,
okay.
Would you actually have a meal there? Or is it more just kind of like sodas, cold drinks, ice cream?
French fries.
oddly enough, their specialty is bison burgers, which there are a lot of bison on the island. I have yet to ask if the meat comes from the island. Yes, if they're importing it from somewhere or if it's just from over the hill.
Better not to ask.
Sometimes it's best.
Yeah, well, well, that's a big movement in the foodie world, you know? Like, that's right. That's, what do you call it? Farm to table,
I think,
right?
We call it from campground to table.
Campground to table.
There we go. We have a new movement here. Okay, so are there any organized activities, educational programs, anything like that that we're
organized or unorganized?
Right. So yeah, they have the typical stuff at the visitor center. There's usually some volunteers there or park rangers that'll do different tours. The last time we were there, they were doing an orienting course where they would give you a compass and have you wander around by the visitor center, hitting different reference points and kind of working your way through it. They've done different things on the birds on the island. When they do, there's a big annual event, the Buffalo Roundup, where they bring all the bison into a common pen and give them vaccinations.
And then they kill them for meat.
Right. Then Burgers. They kill off a couple of them. But they do a lot of education around the animals there. There's a good junior ranger program that they have there on the island that we've been through, and those are always fun. I laugh because they're intended for the kids, but I have yet to go through one of those with my daughter and not learn something as part of it. So
yeah, we find that's one of the wonderful things that we love about traveling with our children is we do things that we wouldn't have necessarily done, and we learn from them. So we've really benefited from that over the last 6 years of having kids.
Then one of the big features on the island is as I mentioned at the beginning there, is the ranch that they have there on the island, which was an active ranch up until the early 80s. It was built back in 1848. And so you can go over and tour it. They've got a lot of the old equipment that's there, the old farm equipment. And they've got people that can take you through guided tours, as well as self-guided tours that kind of walk through all the different the farm equipment that they had there. And so that's a big thing for the kids because they can climb on a lot of the stuff and kind of play around there on the farm or in the ranch area. So,
all right, that sounds fun. Well, are there any insider details that our listeners should know, like in terms of actual sites that you might particularly recommend being at the end of a loop or at the beginning of a loop, anything like that?
Yeah, so the sites that we prefer when we get there are the ones that put you closest to the water. So I would say the outside edge on the north side of the campground. We've stayed in several different parts of the Bridger Bay Loop, and those are the ones that we find the best. The water doesn't come up real close to the campground, but if you don't have anybody beyond you, then you have kind of an unobstructed view. It is staged, so you're the farthest south side of the loop is higher than the farthest north side of the loop. So you don't get really an obstructed view, but we found that if you're on that lower part closest to the water, that seems to give you the best view and has the least amount of wind in the entire thing, and it just seems to be the best setup.
And of course, for our listeners, we'll link to the campground in the show notes on campgroundoftheweek.com, and you just click on that link and you'll see some beautiful photos. So how would you just describe the overall feel of the campground?
Yeah, so one of the things that we've liked about this is it's a really quiet campground with only 25 sites that are widely spaced apart. Like, you hardly have any noise, anything, very little, even though there's no hookups. Like, I don't think I've ever heard a generator running. It's very quiet, very, very calm and peaceful. There aren't playgrounds and stuff on the island or in the campground. So the kids are tending to play at their sites or at other parts of the island out exploring. So it's just calm and relaxing. That's why we really like it, is it's just an easy weekend for us. Sometimes we'll go for just a night or two nights, and it's just a real quick getaway for us, which makes it really nice. So it'd be a great spot if you're transiting through the area, or if you're going to come and stay a little while, it becomes a good base to jump out into other areas.
Cell phone signal okay there?
Yeah, everything's perfect. Yeah, you get good TV signal, good cell phone signal. So yeah, you're solid in both.
Now, nice. Brett, you said everything's perfect, but we know here at Campground of the Week that nobody's perfect.
Yes.
Okay.
Every campground has at least one flaw.
Yes.
So tell us, what could be improved or changed at this campground within reason?
So the thing that absolutely drives me nuts here is you've got the asphalt driveway, that's the pull through, and you've got the concrete site. And for whatever reason, there is 2 feet in between the asphalt driveway and the concrete site that's gravel.
And we know how much you love your concrete slabs. Yes, so get the gravel out of there. Just enough rocks for our kids to throw at one another.
Oh, exactly. That's what our kids would do with them, Brett. I bet Lily doesn't do that.
They get everywhere. They're all over the place. They get in your stuff. They get in your shoes. They're in the trailer. They're everywhere. It's awful.
So I bet they're the little rocks then.
They're the little ones. Oh. Yeah, the little ones. Yes.
Oh. Bring a shovel next time.
I feel your pain on that. Yeah.
So the trick is, and I hate to recommend this, but I'll say it, is if you get a handicap accessible site, it's concrete to asphalt. They bump up against each other.
Okay.
So,
wow.
Not that I'm suggesting booking an ADA site, because that's you want to hold those out to the very end. Oh. But if you happen to be in an ADA site, you don't have the gravel.
So we are going to be back in a second with Brett Nielsen to talk about the activities and attractions near Antelope Island State Park. Stay tuned.
Since 1968, Jayco, the world's largest privately owned RV manufacturer, has been providing a way for generations of families to create lasting memories together.
Today, Jayco offers everything from camping trailers to gas Class A motorhomes, complete with more standard features and a longer, stronger 2-year warranty.
Jayco gives you the value you're looking for and the peace of mind you deserve. Lots of family fun is to be had around a campfire with a Jayco nearby.
For more information, visit your closest Jayco dealer or jayco.com. Jayco, generations of family fun. So we are back with Brett Nielsen from brettnielsen.com, and he is talking to us about Antelope Island State Park. Now, Brett, you just told us all about the campground, everything we need to know to book the campground, to find the perfect site, to avoid anything that we want to avoid. But now, once we're there, we've parked our rig, what are we doing in the area?
Yeah, so once you're in the area, there's a lot we talked in the first half there around what to do on the island, but there's a lot of things off the island that you can do. So one of the things that I've really liked to do is Hill Air Force Base, which is not very far. It's just under a 30-minute drive away. They've got a great aerospace museum. So if you're at all into airplanes, they've got a huge display of airplanes inside and outside. It's a great place to go and let the kids kind of wander around and look at the planes. They've got some replicas of rockets and all kinds of different stuff there. So it's a fun attraction, and it's under 30 minutes away.
That sounds good for young kids. Would it also be good for teenagers? Does it kind of work for everybody?
Yeah, I think it does. As you get into the teenage, because it is you know, just airplanes kind of sitting there, so to speak. If the kids aren't interested in that, they might not grab a hold of it. But it is very valid if there's any interest in aerospace whatsoever. So and it's like I said, a good size, large display.
Now, teenagers, it seems like, would be interested in one of your other recommendations that you sent us, which is Lagoon Amusement Park, right?
Yeah. So that's our big amusement park here, Lagoon. We've got your traditional roller coasters and bumper cars and carnival games, all that kind of stuff. So that's a big, very common place. And one of the other places that's right, essentially across the freeway from that, is Cherry Hill, which is a water park. So you've got a big water park or the amusement park, and Lagoon actually has a full-fledged water park inside Lagoon as well. So you kind of get two for one there at Lagoon. You can do the water park and ride all the rides. So
now, are both of those heading back towards Salt Lake City or going further away?
They're slightly back towards Salt Lake City. So from the island, you're going to go east to get to both of those, and then just a little bit south towards Salt Lake. So both of those are kind of right in that area. And of course, you're from the island, you're only an hour outside of Salt Lake, so you can get into downtown Salt Lake, which has all kinds of activities and museums and parks and
coffee.
Yeah, definitely coffee culture there.
If a family only had time for one, Cherry Hill or Lagoon Amusement Park, what would be your pick?
Oh, I would pick the lagoon hands down every time.
Okay, great.
So, yeah, it's great. And there's a few other attractions there. There's a botanical gardens not far away. There's a dinosaur park that's like an outdoor kind of life-size replica animals that you can walk around and see the dinosaurs. And then if you want something a little bit more historic, within 90 minutes, you can get to the Golden Spike National Monument, which is where the two railroads, the Union and Central Pacific Railroads, joined up and formed that first transcontinental railroad.
Okay, so it seems like if you stay at Antelope Island State Park, you're going to have a really quiet, peaceful time, and you will have to drive a little bit, not a lot, but you'll definitely have to make a little drive, and there'll be lots of stuff within striking distance.
Exactly, yeah. If you kind of outstay your welcome on the island, there's all these other things to do. I would say the island, to give it a fair go, is 1, maybe 2 days. If you're going to be there longer than that, you need to be looking at activities off the island.
So overall, is Antelope Island to you like a place for a weekend / long weekend and not a place for a week? Or is that not necessarily how you would describe it?
Yeah, I would say for me being local, it's a overnight kind of spot, maybe 2 nights. If you're traveling into the area, I would give this a long weekend. If you were out there for a week, I think you would start to lose the beauty of it and be spending so much time traversing back and forth to the island and from the island. Mm-hmm. I think you would lose the value. There's other campgrounds around that might be a little bit better suited if you're going to be there a little bit longer.
Okay, so now, with insider details, you had given us some tips about sites and everything, but you know, you also told us off air that you have to be careful of the biting gnats, right?
Yes,
during the shoulder season. So yeah. Do you just want to say a little more about where they come out and...
Yeah, that's one of the reasons, not only the heat, right? The heat is obviously one in the middle of summer with lack of shade and no hookup, so you can't run any air conditioner or anything like that. But as you get into the summer season, we do get the no-see-em biting gnats out there on the island, and that can really ruin your weekend. And so in the heat of the summer, they are pretty daunting out there. They're pretty much everywhere. So, you know, peak season, peak summer heat, I'd probably be avoiding that area just to avoid those gnats. They actually have signs posted that they won't refund fees because of bugs.
Oh my gosh.
Yeah,
that tells you everything you need to know.
Yeah.
And by the way, I love Brett's notes. Brett does awesome notes when he comes on the show. And in his notes, it says, quote, bug spray is ineffective.
Yeah. Don't even try it, folks.
Don't even try it. It's not going to work.
And you're not going to get your money back.
No, exactly. So that's kind of one of those insider tips, is avoid the, you know, if I was coming into the area and you needed to stay close to Salt Lake, I'd probably look at like the Salt Lake KOA or something like that over Antelope Island if it's the middle of summer.
Okay. And I'm sure you're going to review that on another episode of Campground of the Week. So thank you so much, Brett, for such a great review of Antelope Island State Park. Now tell our listeners where they can find you if they want to follow you on social media.
You bet. So the website, brettnielsen.com, or on Instagram at Instagrablin.
Okay. We already follow you, and our listeners should also.
And Brett, we will see you at the campground.
All right. We'll see you guys soon.
Thank you so much.
Bye.
Bye-bye.
To Jayco for sponsoring this show, and
thank you so much for tuning in to RVFTA's Campground of the Week.
Links to the campground and regional attractions can be found in the show notes at campgroundoftheweek.com.
And don't forget to check out the other podcasts in our network.
RV Family Travel Atlas is hosted by yours truly, Jeremy and Stephanie Puglisi, and available every Friday morning.
And Girl Camper, Going Places, Doing Things, is hosted by Janine Pettit and released every Tuesday morning.
Join us next Thursday for another great review from our team of campground correspondents who will inspire you to hit the open road and explore America the Beautiful.